It is Tuesday, November 16th, 2021, and I want to welcome you to the Godfathers of Podcasting and let you know that we are currently broadcasting live on godfathersofpodcasting.com, and you know we've been podcasting since before podcasting was even called podcasting. Archives of this show, as always, are available on Spotify, Apple, Google, Amazon, or any major podcast provider. The video archives are always exclusively available on our website, godfathersofpodcasting.com. Make sure you buy some merchandise. Go to godfathersofpodcasting.com. It is November 16th. You buy today, you will receive before Christmas. And if not, I'm sorry, but go buy some merchandise because we got lots of cool shit that you can give to all your loved ones and even your hated ones, because then they'll hate you a little bit less. If you've tuned in live right now, you can interact with us, ask questions, send feedback, send your best insults, whatever you want. Just text us 437-375-2000. The number is up on the screen if you are watching us right now. My name is Donnie Da Silva, and it is my honor to introduce two men that were definitely not invited to Adele's very exclusive concert on Sunday because they aren't even household names in their own households. The notorious TID, Chris Tidwell, and my bro, Danny O.
Yeah.
I believe that I actually, well, it'd be tougher for Dan, don't you think? Because he lives alone.
I was going to say, I guess I don't know me.
Like, if you are not a household name there, then that is some tough business. At least in my own house, I mean, she might be referring to the toilet. She might be referring to me, but you know, I've been called a piece of shit around here, so it's a household name.
Melina knows who I am, and that's all that matters to me.
All that matters.
I'm going to assume the answer to this question is no. But did either of you gentlemen take in Adele's concert on Sunday?
Did not.
Absolutely not. Yeah.
Okay. So aside from the fact that this was wrapped around an interview she did with Oprah, which Oprah is right up there with Pat McAfee, Adele, in terms of the king and queen of softball interviews. But aside from that, the concert was unbelievable, but the guest list was even more unbelievable. We're talking about 100-150 of only the cream of the crop of celebrity. You know,
okay, let's play the guessing game.
And it was just, I can't even go through it all. Y'all just got to look at it. It was insane.
What was that all about, though? Like, what is Adele currently, you know,
she got a new album
noise for? Okay,
she got a new album, right?
All right,
that's the big thing. But she's also, you know, she did the thing with Oprah talking about all the controversy around her weight loss, her new relationship, the fact that it was her first time ever that her son had seen her perform. You know, there's all sorts of like little sub stories that were attached to it. But my God, that woman can fucking sing.
Was Machine Gun Kelly there?
I did not see Machine Gun Kelly. I don't think he got the invite.
Well, the dude is everywhere. He gets invited everywhere. So
I don't think anyone
must not have been that big of a deal.
I don't think anyone that's normally cage side at UFC was at this event. I think they're different crossover markets. But a very interesting event nonetheless. And I'm not a fan of Adele necessarily. I respect her talent, but holy shit, that thing blew me away, man.
Yeah, she's talented.
My God, that woman has pipes. There is big news that I want to share with both of you and everyone out there in terms of Nerdland. Everyone has been going crazy over the last little while when it comes to all the big Marvel movies, the comic book movies, and what's going on there and what's happening ever since the Sony Pictures merger, what have you, with Marvel Studios, and saying, well, what's going to happen now? You know, the X-Men universe coming to the Marvel universe and all the talk of Marvel recasting all the X-Men characters so they can make their own X-Men films.
Wait, they weren't already part of Marvel?
Nah, guy, it's all a separate thing. It's all separate. Fox Studios, Marvel Studios, they're all they're different animals. So now, story has leaked. There was a rumored story about a year or so ago, and now the story appears to be solid, may still just be a rumor, but appears to be solid, that both Hugh Jackman and Patrick Stewart, who played Wolverine and Professor X, respectively, the two of them will be reprising their roles in the Marvel Cinematic Universe in the Doctor Strange sequel. Now, both of these men have had on-screen deaths.
Yeah.
But none of that matters anymore.
It's this multiverse.
The multiverse of madness, which is the name of the new
Doctor Strange movie. And so it makes sense that it would be a Doctor Strange thing. Because it's this multiverse, and this is what they're trying to introduce, and this will be a casual little, you know, throw to for them or whatever. Because really, what are you going to do with those two characters? Meh, whatever. The cool part, if this is a thing, is that it opens up the door for, you know, Deadpool to show up with, like, you know, the Avengers again.
Totally, I think that's totally in the cards. And the interesting thing is the story first broke a year or so ago when it was rumored that Patrick Stewart was on set of Doctor Strange. Well, now apparently both Stewart and Jackman were seen on set coincidentally at the same time that there were a whole bunch of reshoots that were happening. So the story we're getting is that it went from possibly being a small little cameo in the film to a more expanded part.
I know that the universe and people who are big fans of it, they put a lot of stock in the actors who play these characters because to them it makes it real when the actor is the character as opposed to the character having several actors play them. And I think these two roles are iconic, Professor X and Wolverine being, you know, Patrick Stewart and Hugh Jackman. I don't see anybody else as those characters except for those two actors. So I think it makes it, again, quote, real.
Well, when what's his name also?
When anytime they're, right? Those characters are portrayed, it's those actors. So I like the move.
What's his name also played Professor X? Your boy from Split.
Yeah, James Avoy. Avoy something.
Fassbender.
Yeah, I know exactly you're talking about, but he was playing a younger, that was like back in the day.
That's right.
So he was the younger, if you're going to play old dude, you can't change up the old dude. McAvoy, I feel bad because he's a dope
McAvoy,
actor.
That's the one. Fassbender was Magneto.
Exactly. Right.
McAvoy. So yeah.
That's his name, James McAvoy. Yeah.
He's a hell of a talent.
He is.
But you're right, man. Like Patrick Stewart always says,
Sir Patrick Stewart
always says he's done with the Professor X character. He literally laid it to rest on screen. He was not going to go back to it, but money.
And listen, the beautiful thing about Marvel Universe, or to be honest, any movie in the world, is that you have the ability to write a script to make sense of why we saw someone die. It was in the future. There was a magic potion. We got a new glove, whatever. People eat it up. You know, there's nothing, no one's ever died unless the actor actually has.
But you don't have to, even explain it anymore.
No,
because you have things, you have like multiverse and variant and all of these other terms that just open the door wide open. Like, I don't know, are we ever going to find out why there was a fucking alligator fucking Loki? Probably not. You know what I mean?
But Loki.
It's just a thing, right? So this multiverse, everybody's like, yep, give it to me. Everybody is just like, all of it in my face all the fucking time. Like, it's unbelievable.
Are you going to pretend like you don't love alligator Loki?
I mean, I prefer alligator loafers.
Or alligators for lunch.
100% alligator.
Have you had alligator?
What the hell?
Absolutely.
You have?
It's it is delicious.
Really?
Absolutely.
I saw it in a restaurant once.
Delicious. Do yourself a favor. If you see it in a restaurant again, do yourself a favor because you are in the right place.
Get you some alligator.
Get some.
So here's a story that I want to mention, and I find it really interesting. Tid brought this one to my attention off air. And this is one of those weird times when we have a technology story and I feel completely in the dark as it relates to the story.
So Danio, do you?
Yeah, I feel like a bit of a Danio.
Okay.
So the story that's going around is that Miramax is suing one of my favorite directors ever, Quentin Tarantino. And the reason is Quentin Tarantino took it upon himself to start selling Pulp Fiction NFTs. I can't wrap my head around the concept of NFTs. They have been explained to me 50 times.
Yep, me too.
And I still don't get it. The non-fungible token.
Yeah.
Like I get it. It's like, it's supposed to be some kind of a trading card type thing that has some kind of value, and it's kind of digital, and it has, maybe it has information loaded on it. I think, I don't know. I don't get it. I don't get it. And then I heard, what's her name? Oh my God. That actress, she's really cute. She was on that 70s show.
Mila Kunis.
Mila Kunis. Thank you, Danio.
I feel like I should have won something. I want to play in a game.
Mila Kunis and her husband, Ashton Kutcher, they have produced a new TV show, which is available on NFTs.
Okay.
I don't even know how that, what? How is that even a
thing? Do you understand cryptocurrency?
No.
Okay. See, this is where it all of this stuff, this, like, I've had even the words that they use in crypto, right. Blockchain and what the hell is a non-fungible token?
We are so like, old
I don't
right
understand
now,
any of that stuff. I would love if somebody were to be able to break it down for the, like, there's those, you know, books for dummies. We're like dummies for dummies when it comes to this stuff.
We are the grandfathers of you podcasting, I mean? in this respect,
because like somebody come on and explain.
I already, and as you already know, I came into this being tech moronic, and I have students. I do hip hop songwriting workshops, as you guys know, and I have students. Actually, one of them turned facilitator, talking about how he's selling his album as an NFT, and I'm like,
what does that mean?
Explain it. Yeah, and there's people who've sold one copy, but for like a grand, and I'm like, who bought your album for a grand?
Yeah.
And you're good What's with one number? Person having it? I don't know.
Like,
definitely not the guy to ask.
Mila Kunis produced a new animated TV show called Stoner Cats. And she said it was too filthy, too dirty, too inappropriate to get picked up by Hulu, Netflix, Apple, anybody, but it's on NFT, and they sold it for like $8 million or something.
Okay, like, so where can you see it?
I don't know.
Right.
You can't see it until that person decides to either resell it or put it out, apparently.
What can we put out as an NFT if we ever discover what this thing is to get even a fraction of that eight, like, why?
Bro, I feel like
a screenshot of the fucking Trues giving the fucking bird on the show or something like that. Like that it would be as simple as that, because apparently then you own it for some reason instead of just taking a screenshot of it. And that's the disconnect. I don't figure it out.
I heard that too. And I'm like, I don't get it.
If you're out there listening to this show or watching this show.
Yeah, man. How come no one's texted us yet?
Godfathers of podcasting at gmail.com or text us 437-375-2000. Please explain this shit to us, because I feel like one of these guys that doesn't even know how a mouse works and is like talking into it.
No, like, it's a wonder we're even on the interweb right now.
Yeah.
You know,
more importantly, what can we sell?
Yeah. What would you buy?
Text just came in. Wow. Guys, happy to help you understand NFTs. It's not a quick text. Holler at me anytime. Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you. We will holler. I'm so confused by this.
Yeah.
I really am. But regardless,
I'm like,
but here's something I do understand. I don't understand NFTs, but I do understand IP. I do understand intellectual property. And I know that Quentin Tarantino knows that he doesn't own Pulp Fiction.
Mm.
So whatever the hell he's selling in magical NFT world, he knows he doesn't have the right to sell shit.
Right. What if it's his private shit? Like, maybe he took photos on set, you know.
Oh, then I don't know.
You know, has, I don't know, some shit signed by the actors. You know, because
to me.
Do you
know this to be the case?
Sorry?
Do you know this to be the case?
I don't. But the only way that NFTs could make any possible sense to me is if there's some sort of exclusivity with respect to what you're buying. Like a screenshot. Like, I heard the same thing Tid did. A screenshot of something that everyone else can screenshot doesn't make sense. But something that no one else has, even if it is digital, which again, I still don't get it, but let's suppose it's, I don't know, you know, on set, the leftover burgers that, you know, Uma Thurman and John Travolta were eating were kept in a box and Quentin took a picture of it because it still exists. Maybe it's frozen. I don't know, something stupid. And you're the only one who has this photo. While I still don't understand why you'd pay for it, I get the exclusivity of it. And maybe that's worth something. Adam.
But that's like for a collector. Where's the resale? Where's the, you know what I mean? Where's the investment? Where's the return on your investment?
I'm obviously no expert on this, clearly, but I heard there is no resale. I heard it's like one of a kind is what an NFT represents. Like, oh, there is only one, which is why someone would want it.
Someone just sent in another text. It said, guys, if you don't understand NFTs, it's in your best interest to figure it out. An NFT sold in March of this year, one single non-fungible token for $69 million.
All right. What can I get? Okay. What can I get for my soul? I'll sell you my fucking soul as a fucking NFT.
But what is that NFT?
If you can figure it out, if you can explain to me well enough to where I understand it, I will sign over my fucking soul as an NFT right fucking now.
I need to know
it says
what
here,
NFT sold for $69 million.
It says a price
because
point
that's what I believe. I don't believe either
million.
Of those two exist.
A Hold price on. Point by of $69 million was achieved by Beeple's Every Days at Christie's, which is apparently the first 5,000 days of NFT existence. It's 21,069 pixels wide by 21,069 pixels high. And it's an image of 5,000 different images.
This image of 5,000 different images was sold for $69 million.
Yeah. Guy, I got lots of images.
What are the drugs necessary to spend $69 million on an image of 5,000 images?
But I could imagine it's all spent like this.
There's hungry people on this planet.
This is where
still.
This cryptocurrency God. Stuff comes in, right? And you know got what you got these kids, you know, like isn't this kind of stuff where like kids like the Paul brothers and stuff like that came from,
no
you know what I mean?
$69 million feeding motherfuckers. How come I've never heard that before?
Let me say this.
Nobody's hungry anymore.
What this is
somebody
okay,
with money fed them all.
Okay, guy, we already sound old. Don't sound like great grandpa.
Nah, bro.
Keep it to grandpa vibes already.
This is the oldest episode of all time.
Keep it to grandpa vibes, not great grandpa vibes. But you know what this whole conversation is reminding me of? Tid, you may remember this. Way back in 1998, Tid and I were sitting together at the Virtually Canadian Studios where we did our first show together, and someone walked into the control room. I don't remember who it was, and said to us, "Hey, look at this. This new website just launched. And it's like a beta test. It's not officially live, but we got a hold of it, and they're looking for investors because they're putting out an IPO." And it was Google.
Oh, wow.
And at the time, Tid, you remember this, we were always using Alta Vista and we were using Ask Jeeves and we were using these search engines that were so kife, Yahoo. And then I remember everyone's reaction when we looked at Google. Because if you guys remember back in those days, for those who are too young to remember, back in those days, a search engine website was like a really busy newspaper page. It was like a portal to like thousands of other bits of information, and then somewhere hidden in the page was a search bar where you could search for shit. Google came out and there was nothing on the page but a search bar,
right?
And everyone's like, this is supposed to work.
I actually remember somebody telling me I need to get my music on Google, like as if you can't, like, didn't understand how it worked. Like, yeah, make sure you're on Google. That way people can find your music. Go on Google.
And then eventually it turned into a catchphrase for a fucking generation.
Yeah,
Google
no doubt.
Me, bitch.
That's right.
You know what I mean? You want to find out who I am? Just fucking Google me.
Yeah.
Don't everything is Googleable now.
Googleable. Even new word. Yeah, exactly.
Googleable. I'm Googleable.
You know?
Google me. Quickly, I want to touch on a story. Subway restaurants are being sued. This is a story I wanted to talk about last week, but we ran out of time during Tid's birthday blowout.
Blowjob.
And that was after we went off the air. Subway is asking for a dismissal in this lawsuit, saying that the case is meritless. But for those that want to know, and Dan, this story is your worst nightmare.
Oh boy.
Okay. A lawsuit claims that there was a study conducted, an independent study in San Francisco, that showed Subway tuna contained traces of chicken, pork, and cattle DNA. So a class action suit was filed in San Francisco. Subway states that the suit is reckless and improper, and it has high quality wild, not farmed tuna, which is 100% regulated in the United States of America. What's your first reaction when you guys hear this? Subway says this is just a smear campaign and it's a bunch of bullshit. For all the pescatarians out there, this is hell on earth, right?
Well, for sure, man. I mean, look, if it's been proven that it's legit, I don't know what scientific studies or experiments they've conducted on the tuna they purchased from Subway.
Someone said they have a study.
Yeah. If that's true, then yeah, I'd be legit pissed at Subway and they should get their case dealt with. I can tell you that as someone who cut, it's interesting you just brought up 98 and then turned it into this story, because 98 is the last time I ate any meat on purpose. I can guarantee that every year since 1998, some meat has infiltrated into one of my meals at some point or the other. Bro, wasn't I with you at a Boston Pizza once and ordered a salad?
When I gave you my meat?
Nah, there was like bacon in my salad. Right, and, you know, there's always something.
What the fuck are you guys talking about? You know, it's funny when that happens. And I shouldn't laugh, but it is funny when that happens. Like if Dan orders a Caesar salad and there's bacon bits, he doesn't just go, yo, can you take the? He's mad. He's big mad.
This particular instance, I was big mad because first of all, I was starving. I think we were there for watching UFC or something. I said, oh, you got all this bacon in my salad. I didn't know that it had bacon. I didn't see it in the description or whatever. Can I get another salad? No bacon. And I remember they took it back and brought it back with a hole in it. It was the same damn salad. They had scooped the pork out of it. And I remember, I wouldn't do this today, but I remember being so hungry. And I remember saying, this is the same fucking, you know what, man, whatever. And I started eating it. And by the time I got to the end of it, there was still some bacon remnants at the bottom. I think one or two had gotten on my fork. Regin, I've eaten meat by accident so many times since I've stopped. And to be honest with you, over and above my dietary choices, there are people who can't eat certain things, obviously, for like allergy reasons. Yeah. So no, man, restaurants got to do their due diligence, bro. They have to. If you're feeding something to somebody.
If you've got a dish that's got chicken, beef, fish, and pork all in the same dish, and you can put it on a sandwich, I am all for that. The only place you're getting that is at a Chinese restaurant, and it's called like the Golden Dragon or like the Phoenix Sun or some, you know, some exotic name like that. So good on you, Subway.
I love the Golden Dragon. Keep fucking over those pescatarians, Subway.
Yeah.
Keep pissing off Danny-O. In another sub story, Firehouse Subs, which is one of those more sophomoric, more freshman type franchises that's out there. They've got about 1,200 locations in the U.S. Oh, wow. They just sold a couple days ago to the parent company of Tim Hortons, Burger King, Popeyes restaurant brands for $1 billion. Wow. Dollars. $1 billion for Firehouse Subs. Can you imagine what they would have sold for if they were good subs? Those subs are
they're good.
I've never had one.
Yeah, they're decent. So dude, in the world, we just got done talking about Subway and now you're gonna like, seriously,
they
come
both
on
suck
now.
But come Firehouse on
now.
Subs,
they're
not.
No, they're no Jimmy John's, they're no, like, you know,
yeah, Jimmy John's makes a good sandwich.
Jersey Mike's, you know what I mean, like,
what the hell are y'all absolutely eating? I've never been to any of those places.
Of course,
but
you have.
You don't leave your house.
Meat.
Oh, good point.
You don't go anywhere.
Two good points.
How are you going to eat out?
Right.
The last story I want to get to before we introduce our guest, who's sitting backstage. Really funny story. I mean, funny only when you look at it from a certain point of view. Not so funny for this person. 7-foot-tall big man from the LA Clippers, Ivica Zubats, came home on Friday night and found a couple assholes, a couple waste utes up in his house, and stole a bunch of shit. And he walked in on them doing it, and they got away with a Rolly, which apparently was, I don't know, worth $20,000-$30,000.
Yeah, it's no NFT.
They ran off with the man's Rolly, and I'm sitting here going, wait a minute. How fucking stupid are these two criminals that they had an NBA player walk in on them in his crib? You know where he's at all the time, brethren.
They didn't play that night, right?
They didn't play on Friday.
Right.
So you got to get a bite to eat. Right? You don't know when he's coming home. Why don't you do it, bro?
Check the schedule. Yeah.
Yeah, check the schedule.
How funny is it that we're cheese that they chose the wrong day to rob this guy as opposed to they really shouldn't have robbed this guy.
We got the burglars from Home Alone.
That's what I'm saying, right? Like, here's the thing. You've got to You've definitely got to appreciate that these dudes got put in some effort. You know what I mean? It's not just a smash and grab. You know that when you're rolling up on this pad, right? Whose it is at least, right?
I just watched Red Notice with The Rock and Ryan Reynolds and Gal Gadot. And like, it's a heist movie. And there's all this planning that goes into the theft. And these guys did no planning. Bro, why did you rob the man when he's playing a game in Toronto? He's got a killer customs. That's a long ass trip.
The away schedule is easy to find, guys.
You got 2 days to get that Rolex. No one's going to get in your face.
And just a Rolex? Come on, bro. You got to go in there with a Santa sack if you're going to rob an NBA player.
They could have wiped his ass clean if they waited for our East Coast trip.
They could have slept over.
Yeah, they could have had honeys at the place. Yeah, and just had a party.
Yeah, just
you could have turned it out, charged admission.
Totally
right.
Yeah, they
run a casino. Run a casino up in this motherfucker for a couple.
Hey
of
guys,
days.
We might not know NFTs, but we know how to rob an NBA player, right? Let's get off camera. Let's start talking.
They could have been really creative.
Holler at us.
They could have got really creative and just like filled up his Netflix with like Bob the Builder. Do you want to continue watching? So all his friends he shares his Netflix password with, like, yo, Ivica, we got to talk. Whatever, man. They could have really screwed with this guy. Nah. They pick the one day in the week when they don't know where he's
at. I guess but you're saying they got away though, right?
I mean,
with a Rolex. Yeah, he was probably, you know where he went? He was probably on his way to Firehouse Sub. Just went to pick up a sandwich.
That's how you bring it all together, folks.
There you go.
Notorious TID is the best in the business when it comes to that. Ladies and gentlemen, it is time right now to introduce our featured guest for the evening. And this young man I first met when he was just a high school freshman. And as many of you know, in my past life, I was a high school teacher that wasn't much older than the kids I was working with. This guest was both my student and one of my favorite players I've ever coached on the basketball court. I spent 4 years coaching this young man in between the school's junior and senior teams and a local community program. And we won a lot of games together. We traveled a lot together and developed a lifelong respect for one another. Since graduating, he's flexed his muscle, showing off his power as a true entrepreneur. He's the co-owner of X10 Entertainment, an independent record label that also specializes in helping artists to brand and market their content while collecting the most royalties possible. He's also an author, having just written a new children's book entitled Glory's Hair Story. I don't want to mess that up. Glory's Hair Story. Oh. There it is, which explores a young girl's love-hate relationship with her hair as she learns to exercise patience and to be aware of her moods and emotion. Available now for pre-order on gloriesbooks.com. In addition to all of that, he also became a dad for the second time just a couple weeks ago. Ladies and gentlemen.
Oh boy.
He's working for a label, but that doesn't mean he's sleazy. He makes your ship blow up Get your blue check easy. Have you seen this boy hoop? His game is kind of greasy. Crossing dudes over makes him feel pretty queasy. He's the number one pick. He ain't no Michael Beasley. Now he's smiling so big, it's looking kind of cheesy. I can't believe he's an author. That shit is kind of freaky. Now I introduce my brother, Sean Thomas, but I call him Wheezy.
Please believe me. Wow. That was an interesting. I feel like I'm worth a billion right now. Like that was
you must good. Be an that NFT collector.
Soon, man. Hopefully soon.
Hey, man, you're good. Gonna have to. First of all, congratulations, brother, on the new baby. Nothing bigger and better than that. I can only imagine. And real quick, because we were talking about this, and he just brought it up, but right. Can you help explain NFTs to us? Because earlier we were all over the place with not getting it.
I would join the not getting it side of things.
Is that right?
Okay. I would run around so and act like I've been in some conversations about it.
Okay.
So hearing it about it in the industry now with people wanting to do NFT albums or NFT pieces, or even with the release of this book, I told people about it and they're telling me I should get an NFT piece of digital art or something like that. So yeah. I got a marketing team that I work with, and they're looking into all the different nuances of the NFTs and whatnot, how to get me a part of that.
Get back to us on that. Part.
Yeah, it's I'll
hit you guys it out, up. Let us know, man.
Right. The let golden ticket. We'll get it together, man.
We feel old, and I know you're a cutting edge dude. So if you still don't have it figured out, I don't feel so bad.
Man, having two kids slows you up from the cutting edge. I'll tell you that much, bro. Like,
all you had time to do was write a book.
Yeah, no, exactly. No, and that was for my first kid. And I wrote the book. It took mad long, man. It took like 3.5 years just to get the
process. Is that right?
Yeah. Even longer, like 4 years just to get like my first couple of batches of them. I'm proud to say, like, you know, I wrote that book, illustrated it. I hired another illustrator to co-illustrate with me. So just going through the learning curves of that was a interesting process for sure.
Dude, I find that really dope. And it's something that I can relate to, man, because one, like my last project, which is over my shoulder here, is all about my daughter and becoming a father.
Right.
And you just mentioned that becoming a father inspired you to write this book.
Right.
And I want to ask about how you were inspired, but also because I get from the title that we're referencing certain stereotypes that people have with our hair and the trouble, especially that the young black girls have with appreciating their own hair. And I would love for you to speak on not just the inspiration, you know, for the book, but on that topic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I have my own relationship with hair.
Right.
And it's funny. I watched recently Netflix, Colin Kaepernick's. I watched one first episode of his new documentary, and he was talking about his hair and the braid ups and seeing Allen Iverson and just how much it hurt. And how much he felt like he was a part of the swag and the culture. And I was watching it. I was like, you know what? I kind of resonated with that, because in high school, I grew my fro out. I braided my hair. And then it became a thing where I had to maintain, understand how to maintain the moisture, texture, you know, all those little nuances of just your hair and all that. So fast forward now into my 30s, I have my first kid, and I'm watching her go through those same things, understanding the dynamics of her hair. People not understanding her hair, her going to school at the age of 4 or 5 and little kids are trying to touch her hair and saying, hey, you don't have long hair like me. You don't count in this girl category that we got popping over here. And she just comes home like, daddy, why?
Right.
And I'm stuck with, like, how do I explain it in a way where it's, I'm not saying pointing the finger at people, but trying to help her understand. So I thought that writing the book would be an easy way for me to do that, because I'm an expressive person. I'm an artist first and foremost. So getting that out for my daughter was a passionate, authentic way for me to kind of like articulate, you know, understanding your hair, where it comes from, different ways of texture, different ways of styling, how to protect your hair. So I kind of covered all those things in this book. And I'm not so much saying, you know, don't touch my hair, or I'm not addressing the direct stereotypes of, you know, black hair and issues we go through with that. I'm kind of just kind of educating it, shifting it a little bit, where I'm not so direct on the negative part of it, but more so the understanding, the happiness, your heritage, the bonding time with your mother or grandmother, whoever does your hair, however you come to understand that. And then for my daughter, it was first her mother and then secondly her grandmother working on her hair. So I put those two vital pieces in the story as well.
That's dope.
It sounds like it's a lot about self-love and not corrective behavior.
Mm-hmm. Right, for sure. And that's the best way to, that's how I thought it was, because growing up, like playing basketball, you know, I had to understand where I was good. I had to listen to coaches and tell me like, all right, this is where you're good at. This is where maybe you pass the rock, pass it to Blinkers. Blinkers cut through a lane and dunk on a man. Like, so those are things you got to understand where to play your role. And like that, yeah, exactly. Like,
did I say that?
Yeah. So, pass it to Blinkers is the most Scarborough thing ever.
Oh, man. R.I.P. Right? Blinkers, yeah, man. So. For those that don't know, that's John Chambers, who we've talked about on this show, brother of Shamad Chambers, who has been a guest on this program.
Yes.
Rest up Links. But and sure. Sean obviously was a teammate of his and one of his boys. But yeah, man, I understand what you're saying. It's all about understanding a role, understanding how you fit in, and understanding how to maximize how you fit in.
Yeah, yeah. So that's my way of showing the youth a little. I have a plan of doing a couple more books and doing a series, just Glory's first time, first experiences with different things.
I was going to say, because when I looked at your website, gloriesbooks.com, I'm like, okay, this isn't glorieshair.com. This is, you've got a plan here. You're planning to make Glory a star.
Yeah, yeah. Glory's going to be a star for sure. Many layers, different things I'm going to include. Once you buy the book, I'm going to have a QR code that links to a separate page. And it's for little scholars, I call it. It's like a reading club. So kids are going to go log on. There'll be a game. There'll be some words from the book. I don't use easy words in this book. I'm using some words that's going to challenge a 5-year-old, 6-year-old, even a 7-year-old to read. Because my daughter, she's reading through it a little choppy right now, but she'll get the rhythm of it. The book rhymes. So I have some plans to include that interactive aspect of the book as well.
I now know what I'm getting my niece Melina for Christmas.
Yeah,
that's pretty clear, right, Dan?
No doubt, man. I would love for her to have that book.
That's what's happening. But yeah, man, that's amazing. And so, would you say the audience is specifically young Black children and specifically Black girls, or is this something that anybody, any youngster is going to find value in?
I think any youngster is going to find value in. Obviously, the images are a little bit centered around, well, not a little bit. It's centered around me and my Black children and whatnot.
Sure.
So you're going to see that in the book. But there's certain references to saying, you know, kids, your hair is unique to you from generation to generation. It comes from your mom and your pop. Like, I'm speaking to, you know, I have other characters in the book of different colors as well. I'll just turn to a page here. Real
quick. Yeah, we're getting a sneakers.
Mm-hmm. NFT. I'm just gonna use it until I get the definition right.
Just keep saying NFT.
I'm just gonna throw it out. Someone's gonna bring me lunch. I'm like NFT.
That's right.
One of these days, if I use it enough, I'll get it right.
Man, I saw Tory Lanez talking about how he sold 1 million NFTs for $1, and it looked like a lot of money, and hopefully we'll get it one day. But as for now, I got physical copies of this book.
Yeah, physical copies, you know what I mean? I understand.
So yeah, so I put here like everyone was born with their own unique hair, some thick and some thin, some stick up everywhere, some wavy, some curly, some coiled like a spring. But mommies and daddies are where hair stories begin. And I have different kids in here.
Yeah.
Just to show you that, all right, your hair lays flat. This one curls up in a poof.
Sure.
Yours is tied up in a bun, but we're all on the same page understanding what our heritage is about.
Dude, I really think that's beautiful, Sean, because I think hair is actually probably one of the greatest examples of how we can speak to children about our differences, but more importantly, how our differences are beautiful. You know, like so much about being a kid is innocence, right? And some of the things I love to see online is like how kids hugging each other and playing with each other. And they use these examples of how they don't know racism yet. They're not aware of the things that adults have done to ruin this world. And I find that hair, I know for me, speaking for me, being of mixed race and having this hair, I was beginning to discover and understand differences when people would call me names based on my hair and not really understanding I didn't really think about why it was so different until it was pointed out that it was different. So I think what's beautiful about your book, and maybe you can speak on your own experience. I used to have dreads too, which is a whole other way.
Yeah, I remember that.
Like,
I remember seeing you on stage, man, with dreads too, rocking out.
Yeah, bro, brother. And you know, like when you have them, as and you can speak to this, what I want to ask you is like, it's a whole other representation of self. And with that comes people's interpretation. I always felt wherever I walked, wherever I was with these locks, I felt like I had to be representative of my community in an even more stronger way, because I believe the stereotypes are coming my way. And they did. They did heavy. And so
I think it's ridiculous, though, for anyone to ever pick on Dan based on hair when there's so many other things you can pick on him.
So many. Easily.
Height.
Yeah.
Ears.
Keep going.
His appetite. You know what I mean? Being cheap.
Inability to show up on time.
Why they got you? Whoa, man.
Brett, needed you here today, guy. What do you mean? It's like this all the time, bro.
Yeah. NFT.
This whole NFT. They NFT me every week. That's exactly right, Tim.
That's it. NFT, not fucking truth.
Can I ask you to speak on how being a dread, having the dreadlocks, has impacted either the way that you feel you need to represent your community, your family, or otherwise, and how you've, even if it's influenced how you've had to tell your story? Because like I was saying at the beginning of this whole question, is that I think hair is one of the earliest ways that kids become aware of their differences.
That's deep, and I resonate with that question because with my hair and my journey, I've had opportunities where it's been my help, like it's aided me in certain, it's helped me connect, it's helped me meet new people just based off of their willingness, off of their perception to come talk to me in a new setting, whether I'm in Jamaica or, you know, Italy or something like that, Canada. For some reason, me having this hair, it broke down some barriers with people for being able to talk to me. Alternatively, though, it stopped some progressive moments for me in my life. So I'll give you a quick story. Later in my life, before COVID, I was traveling. I was doing a tech job, going all across the country. I went to Dubai, Malaysia, Singapore, and Italy. So we had a gig. We had a gig in Italy, Rome International Airport, and we were supposed to go in there, install indoor GPS systems. You know,
I remember when you were doing that gig.
Put some tech in there, and it was a cool gig, man. It was sick. I was traveling, I was having fun, seeing the world. My DNA was changing by the minute. You know what I mean? Like it was just, I've never experienced something like that before. Anyways, the day of the trip going to Italy, man, they didn't have my passport picture or nothing yet. Mind you, my passport picture of a full beard, my dreads is a little bit up and it's kind of sticking out to the side, up top. So that passport picture, I wasn't cognizant of, all right, what my hair looks like in this picture. So I sent my passport to Rome International Airport. Security guys got it, and they canceled the whole project. This must have been like a $20,000, $30,000, $40,000. Wow. I don't know how much it was. We booked hotel fees. We booked plane tickets. Canceled. They just said, you know what? Fuck it. We ain't giving you no security pass to walk around this airport.
Whoa.
So that was like in my face, right?
These
experiences just kind of make you aware of like how you present yourself, how confident you have to be. Are you gonna let that continue to be a barrier or not? Growing up, my dad used to always be like, why don't you cut your hair, like, just cut your hair, like loud of dread thing. You know where dreads come from? When I was growing up in the 70s, Sean, let me tell you, the dread them just born ganja.
That's my mom's speech, bro.
And so I'm saying, okay, so we can't be
your dad
little bit more.
Does not play. Your dad does not play. Your mom too does not play.
No, man. She was gonna kick me out the house, she told me.
Yeah, but I mean the more you go past it, and you're not, like I said, not let it be a barrier, any holdback to you. You own it, you walk forward, your parents start to understand, people see who you are, and they kind of know that's you, that's your shell now. You can't look at my hair or my beard or my braids or my tats and think that I'm any less than because of I can still articulate myself, I can still move around, you can put me anywhere on God's green earth, I'll triple my worth, like Jay-Z says.
Nice,
so that's the confidence I kind of instill in myself. And I hope to instill in others and the artists I work with on the music side and my daughter and anybody who's in my life, I hope to just radiate that type of confidence and charm and wit and understand, like, knowing thyself is the biggest part of any equation in no what doubt. You're doing in life. So
yes, sir.
Weez, we got some questions that came in from the audience. You mind if we throw some at you?
For sure.
From 437-375-2000, this one. Hi, Sean. Enjoying the interview. Wanted to say I am also an author working on my first book. Curious to know about the process of getting published. Did you choose to self-publish? Did you manage to find a publisher? What was that process like for you as a first-time author?
Good question. Thanks, 437 NFT Aiden, whatever.
That was NFT texting you. Right?
Yeah. We got that message on our NFTs.
For sure. I did self-publishing just only because that was the only way I figure stuff out. And it kind of helps me understand each process so that even when the day comes, a big company wants to come take me on, I understand the verbiage in their contract. I understand what to look out for. I know, costs and all that stuff for my own business sense. I just like to know from my own sense. And that's the road I took, man. Self-publish. Hopefully if I sell enough on my own, then, you know, I can attract some big wigs and they either jump on board and help me out or not.
Has anybody approached multiple... you yet?
Oh, sorry.
No, not yet. No, okay. I haven't. This is my first time. I kind of took it on as like a personal project. I've always wanted to be an illustrator. I used to look up to Bob Ross and Robert Munch and those illustrators were just people I always, who else was there? There was another illustrator I used to watch, Robert.
Mr. Dress Up Guy.
Nah, man. Nah. I ain't rocking with that. No, but yeah. So yeah, I've always wanted to do it. And then this was the opportunity. I had the time to sit down. Like I said, my daughter was born and I kind of had to take a little step back from the faster lifestyle I was leading at the time.
Yo, if you can pull in some of that Robert Munch money off kids' books, trust me.
And kids' books sell for years and years and years and years.
Yeah. Yes.
There's a question. Well, actually, there's three or four of them that came in within the last 5 minutes that I'll say, where's the baby? Can we see pictures of the baby? Leave the man baby alone. All you ladies are the same. Show us the baby. Fuck off. Like, leave. Where do you think the guy's going to bring his baby up on the screen and be like, yo, here's my baby, like the Lion King. He's going to present it to you. Come on.
Not a chance, no.
I hope your baby's sleeping peacefully right
She's
now.
She's sleeping. I just installed this app so I can watch her. This is my first, like, second time out really away from her. So,
wow.
I have an app. I'm watching her live right now as we speak.
Yeah. Let me ask you, bro, because I'm in this position. I'm curious to know how you feel being a girl dad. You know, is there something we clearly don't know what it's like to have sons, but obviously we have that in common. And now that you have two, I'm just wondering if you can speak to that, because obviously you put your heart into a book. I put my heart into an album. So I get coming from the perspective of loving your little girl so much, you had to express it to the world and do something that would also enrich and nurture her going forward. But what's it like though? Tell the world, because I find like we're still living this world where like stereotypically dudes want to have a son.
Yeah.
And I don't feel that way. How do you feel?
I felt that way.
Right.
after having my first, I immediately did not feel that way.
Exactly.
And now after having my second, I doubled down on not feeling that
Absolutely,
way.
Absolutely, like, bro.
It's human life.
That's
We're
awesome.
Here for a time. We give back. We put into the universe. We get, we give, we get, we give. So I don't look too deeply on the details of it in terms of, you know, am I going to get the boy child or, you know. My daughter will be great. Right now, seeing her learn how to swim is something that is deep for me. Like, I've never, we were at the dinner table the other day, and I said, I looked at my mom. I said, Mom, you know how to swim? She said, no. I said, Dad, you know how to swim? He said, no. My daughter looks at me. She said, Dad, you know how to swim? I said, no. And she looks at all of us. She's like, I'm the only one who can swim.
Yeah,
those little things to me is like, you, this little black kid is like, the stereotype is we don't swim. We come from an island, and how much people don't go in the water?
I've never gotten that either.
Just fill in one fish and eat fish and drink some alcohol and call it a day. But I never really delved deep into the water thing. And she's loving it.
Same.
It.
So, yeah, that's great.
We got a couple different texts here asking the same question in a different way. So I'm going to read this one. Can someone please explain to me why Donnie keeps calling Sean Thomas Wheeze?
Wow. He ain't be watching the show?
Wheezy, huh?
Yeah, where'd that come from?
Wheezy is a nickname from Time.
Yeah. From Time.
And this before or after Lil Wayne now?
Oh, man. And see, that's why I hated that nickname so much. Everyone used to be like, yo, Wheezy F baby. And I used to be like, yo, fire for that, yo. Wheezy F no baby. No, right. F nothing. And I hated that Lil Wayne reference so much.
Yeah.
But really and truly, it was a girl I used to be friends with. Shout out to Kia.
Yeah.
I don't know if she see the link and she joined in right now, but her name's Kia. My voice was cracking and changing. She called me Wheezy one day. I don't know how it reached high school, but it stuck. And then now I'm freaking grown and people still hit me up and say, Wheezy.
Right.
I don't think I've called him Sean since the first day of school.
you call him that strange. In class, though?
Yeah, even in class, I think.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it was a Wheezy thing still. Yeah.
He was Wheezy to everybody. He was like a character on a TV show that everyone just called him by his nickname.
Dan, what made you think that Donnie was going to be an appropriate teacher?
Literally, it's funny you say that. Because, bro, all these years later, I'm like, the more I know this guy, the less I believe he was a teacher.
He was just hanging out
in my classroom, Bredrin.
I know. I'm still.
What'd you learn?
How was he as a teacher?
What did you learn? This is the thing. What did you learn?
I'll be real with you. I don't remember much.
And that's how you sum up Donnie's career as a teacher.
In fairness, it was a long time ago.
And back then in high school, I was so focused on basketball. I had hoop dreams. I didn't really give a hoot about
class. So that brings up
what this tall ass guy was saying to me in front of my class. Like, I had no care.
That brings up another question that came in. What was Donnie like as a basketball coach, Sean?
Oh, man. So.
Be nice.
That's a tough one.
In fairness, Donnie is sending himself texts.
Donnie was a fair coach, want to win. We won a lot. You reinforce a lot of the stuff we learned in practice. Like, I'll say one thing. Any program I was a part of with Donnie, fundamentals was a big part of it, where we learned the very fundamentals of it. And from there, you just build on. Yeah, man. Donnie was a part of some great coaching staffs, man. So in totality, these guys showed me that basketball was, I guess the word is microcosm for life. Hmm. It showed me teammate. It showed me your leadership.
Right.
It showed me disappointment and success. You know, it showed me failures too. So being able to stomach all that within a season with a bunch of guys, it kind of gears you for some of the life's turmoils in terms of, you know, having a job, not having a job, COVID, bouncing back, entrepreneurship, all that stuff. I see it very similar. So, yeah, shout out to Donnie, man.
Wow.
One of my favorite.
We hit those positive influence.
We hit those same emotions every week on this show, but it stops usually at disappointment.
Yeah. Yeah, failure, sadness, despair.
I'll tell you, one of my favorite.
Because we don't know what the fucking NFT is.
One of my favorite memories coaching Shad was actually my very first year coaching him, and I know you'll remember this, Wheeze, is you were on our junior basketball team and you were playing, but you weren't starting, right? Mm-hmm. You weren't getting big minutes because that team, you were grade 9 and there was a bunch of grade 10s. And back in those days, we even had a couple grade 11s on the junior team that were getting big minutes. And so you were getting minutes, but you weren't starting. You weren't getting mad minutes.
Yeah.
At least not at the start of the year. I think towards playoffs, you were getting a hell of a lot more minutes. I remember we went to the Metro Championships and you were playing a boatload.
Yeah.
But I got an opportunity after our season started to coach a local community team.
Mm-hmm.
And it was specifically a grade 9 team. And they asked me, they said, we need a coach. You know, the coach quit. Can you come in, take over the team? So I said, all right. So I looked at the team. I'm like, there's not one guy here that can hoop. So I went back to the school. I said, Wheeze, I need a ringer. You want to come in? You want to play? And he's like, hey, man, more ball. So he came in and he was the Michael Jordan of that league. He absolutely destroyed everybody. And it was so fun for me to see this kid who was putting in his time, putting in his work, you know, he was on a really talented high school team, right? With a lot of depth at multiple positions. We just didn't have any bigs, but we had a lot of depth. Yeah. And he came in and said, I'm going to take this opportunity to play more. And he just absolutely destroyed everybody in his path. And remember, Blinks was my assistant coach. You remember that?
Yeah.
And I remember one time, John Chambers is my assistant coach, and I call a timeout. We're in a game, and the game is still close. And Chambers looks at me and says, yo, coach, can I say something in the timeout? And I'm like, yeah. And he looks at Sean and goes, yo, Wheezy, food these guys.
I've heard this story.
Yeah.
And that was the whole time. And I'm like, okay, go. The whole timeout. And Sean went to work and did his thing. And so many great memories, man, from those teams. You know, all the travel, all the different tournaments and everything else. We had a great time, man. And definitely it formed a long, long-term relationship, long-term friendship. I want to talk before we wrap this up, Wheezy, about your other business, X10 Entertainment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because we also have a question here about what exactly does X10 Entertainment do? I'm an artist. I'm looking for ways to get my music out. Can X10 help me? So can you explain in 60 seconds or less about what that company does?
Yeah, X10 Entertainment right now, we specialize in artist development, marketing, distribution, royalty collection, publishing. So different facets of like your traditional label. However, we don't really do it as a traditional label. We kind of offer more of like an a la carte service where you pick and choose what you need from our menu of options. I'm backed by a really reputable label, Coalition Records. They're behind Simple Plan, a couple other big bands too as well. So they've kind of, we've partnered and they lend me their resources and their experience, which is like 30 years of music industry experience. I use my wit and my energy to, you know, find new artists, promote them, help them out. Usually a lot of artists, man, they don't really understand what it takes to kind of make it to the next level. So I kind of jump in and show them what it takes, what they need to do to get some recognition and whatnot in a nutshell.
So you go out and like search for these dudes? Do they come find you? How do they find you? How do you
Really and truly, it started with one artist, and we just explored all opportunities with him. And through that, we've gotten deals with TikTok. We've been with CBC. We've gotten some BBC One Extra looks, and just some different. Man, we grew a lot with him. He didn't hit yet, and we're still working with him. But he's gotten a lot of corporate love and stuff like that. So what we've tried to do is just formulate that and put it on to the next artist. And so I'm being who I am in this area, the GTA, I kind of know a lot of people, know a lot of artists, so I don't have to go too far to find them. And that's kind of where my bread and butter is right now, is that I can just go to an event and meet someone. They rap, sing, or do a beat. I kind of make them, I call it social engineering. I put people together, figure out what they need, and make things happen. So.
Well, you heard my bars off the top. I mean, you going to help me out or what, Wheez?
Oh, no, nah, man. I'll draw a couple pictures, man. I'm not trying to join you on that. No.
NFT Don on that, bro. Yeah. NFT him on that.
These bars ain't free.
No fucking time for that.
These bars ain't free, man.
All right. Maybe we'll work with you on branding out the Godfathers of Podcasting and see what we can do.
For sure. I could do that one.
Because that's your wheelhouse. But
yeah, man. Listen, branding and creative design and artist development. That's the type of stuff I'm into, man.
Much respect. And we've got the links up on the screen right now for everybody who wants to check them out. Gloriesbooks.com and X10 Entertainment. .ca. Make sure you visit both. Glory's Books, you can pre-order right now, right, Wheez?
Yes. Pre-order, reserve the books now. It'll be available shortly.
And it's a real thing. It's not an NFT. You can hold it in your hand. You can flip pages.
We're developing the NFT. So if we can get me on another time, I'll be more developed. I'll have some artists that are through the pipeline who've probably made it yet.
And let us know what it is.
Anytime you want to come out here and explain NFTs to us, you have an open channel on this program.
Yeah.
Yo, I have a friend that could probably sit beside me and get it popping for you for sure.
All right. Well, we'll work that in, man. X10entertainment.ca. If you're an aspiring artist, you're looking to brand your stuff, you're looking to distribute, you're looking for some help, give them a shout. X10entertainment.ca. This is, they're all over Instagram too, by the way, folks. So we'll link up their stuff on the godfathersofpodcasting.com and make sure that everybody knows where to find them. Wheezy, my boy, Sean Thomas, my little brother from another mother. You know, I love you, bro.
And, yeah, I love you too, man.
Thank you so much for hanging out with us tonight. Really, what I wanted to do was just say how proud I am that you put this out. Every single time this guy does something big, I don't care if it's like he started a business where he was selling gold fronts and hustling.
We didn't even get into that.
He had his face on the front of a local newspaper because he was doing art installations within the community. This guy is just a hustler. He works hard. He's a true entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Totally respect the grind. You know that.
Thank you.
And I love everything that you're doing. And I cannot wait for your wedding because that is going to be a flex that nobody should miss.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you guys for having me on for sure.
Yes, sir.
Daddy-o. I'm going to take a listen to your music. I didn't know you had one, a daughter inspired album that I'm going to take listen.
Yes, sir. The Day It All Changed, man. Take it in. There's two versions of it, original and the lockdown remixes that we did over the course of COVID. So enjoy my bro.
Thank you. Thank you, Chris.
Yeah.
Donnie, you know it's love. Keep this guy on his toes. Keep him sharp. I heard he's messing up a lot, man. Keep him good. Keep him good. Keep him accountable.
For sure.
All right, my man. We'll talk soon.
Yes, sir. Much love, man.
Yeah, man.
All right. Sure. That's Sean Wheezy Thomas, everybody. That's my boy. Hell of a guy. And you know what? I know that, you know, Sean may not have the same reach as some of the guests that we've had on the show in the past, but I am just so proud of what he's accomplished that I had to give him this platform to come out here and talk about the, and I knew Dan, I knew you would love it, man. That book,
it's right up your alley, man.
Everything he's doing is right up your alley.
100%. And I think it's super important for this show to be an outlet for people like Sean. Yeah. To get the word out about what it is they're doing, not just because he's an entrepreneur and has, you know, something to promote, in this case, a book, but the messages that we send out to the world, especially in this case, which is young Black excellence. You know, this is a man who, as you called him, a hustler and a grinder, someone who's, you know, worked hard to not just be successful professionally. He's clearly a family man. He is everything that, he is a stereotype breaker, you know, and it is a big deal for me anytime anyone who is young, a person of color, breaks the stereotype that we've talked so much about on this podcast, man, the hatred that so many people continue to spew out into this world. We combat with people like this unbelievably talented and intelligent young man to prove them all wrong. So I appreciate him and I appreciate you bringing him on here, man. That's what we're about.
That's what we do. Final thoughts, gentlemen, because we got to wrap this thing up. Tid?
That was mine.
Really, really what it boils down to is everybody that comes onto this show as a guest is on here because we think that they are a superstar.
That's
right. That is really what it boils down to. So everything that we can do for them as a platform for them is what we will continue to do. And, you know, the more the merrier. I think this is fantastic stuff. You know, I can't wait to see the book. And I don't even have kids, but I've got nieces.
Yeah, but you could talk to your dogs about not being self-conscious about their hair, you know, because Oliver, he's always like feeling like a little low every time I see him.
It's because he's a redhead.
I want to say this to piggyback off Tid's comment. Someone said to me this past weekend when they were saying that, hey, I recently discovered your show. I sometimes I get a little confused because one week you have an athlete, next week you have a comedian, next week you have, you know, a wrestler, the next week you have someone else from a totally different walk of life. And I'm like, yeah, that's the point. We don't pigeonhole ourselves into any one niche. It's all about giving a platform to people that we think are incredible and deserve a platform. And it's all about shining a light on those people. And hopefully you've come to understand that regardless of who it is that we have as a guest on this show, whether you've heard of them before, whether you're their biggest fan or not, by the end of that interview, you're going to walk away going, I think I learned something. And I think I like that person a little more than when the interview started. Tid?
Right.
We do not focus on employment. We focus on message. That's what we do here.
That's a damn poignant. That's the most poignant shit you said this week.
That's how you end
Go
the show
fuck yourself.
Yeah.
And here's my final thought. Judge Bruce Schroeder, there's a special place in hell for you, my friend. There's a special place in hell for you, Judge Bruce Schroeder, who tried to convince the jury without saying it that they need to make sure that Kyle Rittenhouse is not found guilty. You sanctimonious son of a bitch. Let me just say that when you started this trial and prevented the prosecution from referring to the murdered individuals in this trial as victims, and they had to be referred to as arsonists, and they had to be referred to as looters and rioters, but not victims. And then you tell the jury right before they break to deliberate, you must decide, did Mr. Rittenhouse act within the context of the law to defend himself when he feared for his life? Let's just remember that there was a kid, little black kid, that was shot and killed, and no charges were laid because the kid was holding a toy gun, and apparently the cop feared for his life. This son of a bitch had an automatic rifle and used it, and he's gonna walk? If that happens, I promise you, America will riot. If that happens, I promise you, you're asking for some form of vigilante justice. And Bruce Schroeder, if I were you, when this case is over, innocent or guilty, I'd really think about finding yourself a winter home in Mexico and go the fuck away before someone catches up with you, bro. Because the shit you've been saying, right down to those Asian food jokes you were making off camera, right down to everything else, you, my friend, are the epitome of white privilege. And I am embarrassed that you were selected for this trial. Go fuck yourself, Bruce Schroeder. Go fuck yourself, Kyle Rittenhouse. And if you're one of these people out there that says, hey, he's just a kid, he didn't mean to kill anybody, y'all can go fuck yourselves too, and don't ever tune into this show again. Feel me?
If Kyle Rittenhouse was a young black kid who showed up at January 6th
and shot
three of those rioters, would he have been able to walk past the police? Would there be a trial?
No, there'd be no trial because he'd already be dead.
He'd be dead already.
Yeah, man.
So go fuck yourself.
And the people that go on and on, like, oh, well, you know what? Those people he shot, they were committing crimes. Okay, maybe they were. And if they were, you know where they should be right now? They should be in court fighting for their freedom and trying to figure out what crimes they are or are not guilty of. They have allowed Kyle Rittenhouse to act as judge, jury, and executioner. And right now, it looks like the son of a bitch is going to walk. Fuck all y'all.
The boy.
That's my final thought.
The 17-year-old boy left his home state to go to a Black Lives Matter-based protest with a rifle.
Right.
What the fuck about that says self-defense?
Right.
We all know why the fuck he showed up.
Nobody showed up at his house. He went there with intent.
After posting over and over and over again on his Facebook prior to the event, if I was at a BLM rally, you know what I would do? I would take out my rifle and I'd shoot all these mother... Fuck you, Kyle Rittenhouse.
Yo, fuck all y'all on that motherfucker's side. All
fuck them all. Fuck them all. Fuck an NFT. Fuck a Kyle Rittenhouse. Fuck a judge. Fuck you. And fuck both of you.
Fuck you too, Donnie.
Fuck you too.
NFT.
We're setting the record for most fucks this week.
Yo, I can't believe we ended like that, but yo, it's like, yeah.
Fuck it.
Fuck y'all.
On behalf of my bro Danny O and the notorious TID Chris Tidwell, my name is Donnie Da Silva. Fuck a judge, fuck Kyle Rittenhouse, and fuck all y'all. Thank you, Sean Thomas, for joining us. We'll see you next time.